In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello! Welcome back to another archaeogastronomical adventure with me, Thomas Dinas. This is the Delicious Legacy podcast, where we're diving deep into the past to explore forgotten foods and the history of ingredients throughout the world. On today's episode, we're going to check a delicious nut, a popular ingredient as a snack or as part of desserts or savory dishes, the pistachio. Where is it from? How did it spread around the world? And why the Sicilian one is the best? Before we go to our episode, let me remind you that this podcast can only exist with your generous support. So please go to Patreon and from $2 a month, become a member of the Delicious Legacy and get yourself not only the podcasts ad-free and early, but a wealth of recipes, engine musings, and articles and interesting thoughts and other unique writings from me and from the ancient world as well. I'm also making some videos, so check them out on YouTube. And please leave a review and a rating wherever you get your podcast from, either Spotify or YouTube or Acast or Apple Podcasts or Amazon and so on and so on. Right, let's go to our episode. Wherever the wind blows, your pistachio tree will pollinate then. Pistachia are wind-pollinated plants. Of course, this is less effective and, of course, much less controllable way of pollinating a tree compared to the pollination by bees. It is riskier as well. Depends on which way the wind blows and where are your female trees. To further complicate matters, male pistachio trees can sometimes be out of sync with the female ones, blooming up to a full month ahead of the females. And there's only a handful of days that the female trees are in bloom. Pistachios are the only dioecious tree nut, which is to say it has a female and female tree. Whether wild in a forest or cultivated in an orchard, the optimal male to female ratio is 1 to between 10 and 12. In the man-made orchards, farmers have to pollinate the trees artificially, something that people in ancient Mesopotamia seem to have figured out many thousands of years ago. We get these clues from examples like a 9th century BCE, Assyrian bas-relief of winged genies shaking a cone over a flowering tree, all the way to historian Strabo on his 1st century BCE description of people hand-pollinating dates. This brings the question, how did people first get the idea to take a male flower and shake it over the female ones in order to pollinate them? Regardless when that happened, it is a genius idea. However, humans could only do that once they had a forest or an orchard of Pistacia vera. The first appearance of the pistachio we know and love today came about randomly. Pistachios do not reproduce true to type. For example, plant a peach, an apricot, or a lemon seed, and you'll get a plant with the same characteristics as that of the parent plant. Not so with many other fruits, including most apples, cherries, and pears. And of course, our subject today, pistachios. Then humans intervened. Scientists believe an ancient farmer or farmers recognized the qualities of this new variant and figured out that the only way to keep the supply coming was by grafting branches of this tree onto other trees. Farmers lopped off the top of a pistachio tree with the undesirable fruit and then lashed a branch from one of the tasty nuts into a severed trunk. The next step was to wait, as the tree needed to gather the vascular systems of the trunk, or rootstock, and branch scion. It is impossible to know how and where the first idea of grafting arose. Perhaps it was through trial and error, as many things. Or perhaps people were emulating something that they saw in nature. Very interesting theory, this. It seems like sometimes it happens that trees that grow together close to each other, they seem to graft. And then two trees merge into one. So the ingenuity here lies in the farmers realizing that grafting was a way to have more trees with the same nut. Or basically, as we can put it another way, to lock this variety in place. Evidence so far points to farmers having domesticated the pistachio during the first millennium BCE, and that was somewhere within its wild range, which is today's Central Asia, what we call Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, as well as the northern Iran and northern Afghanistan. Over the centuries after the first cultivations, as they cultivated and developed what we now call Pistachia vera into a local cash crop, merchants disseminated through markets along the Silk Road trade routes. By the 1st century CE, the Greek physician Dioscorides was proclaiming this nut as a remedy for stomach ailments in his De Materia Medica. By the 7th century, Silk Road pistachios had fans all the way to India and China. Jump a couple of centuries later, and the Sogdian scholar Abu Bakr Muhammad ibn Jafar Narsaki, in his 943 CE History of Bukhara, describes bazaars devoted solely to pistachios and tradesmen who specialized in selling these nuts. But even then, it seems like cultivation of the pistachio was not extremely widespread. Today, the pistachio, or Pistachia vera, a small tree of the cashew family, and its edible seeds, is grown in dry lands in warm or temperate climates. It is widely cultivated from Afghanistan to the Mediterranean region and in California. The seed kernels can be eaten fresh or roasted and are commonly used in a variety of desserts including baklava, halva and ice cream. They are also used for its yellowish-green coloring in confections. From its presumed center of origin, pistachio cultivation was extended within the ancient Persian Empire, from where it gradually expanded westward. And the name pistachio probably derives from the word pistach in the ancient Persian language. Pistachio nuts are also mentioned in the Bible as precious gifts carried from Canaan to Egypt by the sons of Jacob. Pistachio cultivation spread into the Mediterranean countries with the advent of the Roman Empire. The ancient Greek botanist Theophrastus describes the pistachia as a tree that comes from India, and it looks like the timber tree on his branches and leaves, aside from the seeds themselves, who look like almonds. And this is a tree that grows in Bactria as well. Aristobulus too, a historian who went on Alexander's expedition, described this important tree, and naturally enough also described it as a terebinth. That was the best he could do for simply, in ancient Greek, there was no name for the pistachio tree yet. But the poet Nicander, a century after Theophrastus and Aristobulus, refers to the pistachio in language which is pretty close to Theophrastus, but he gives it a name. All the pistachios that grow like almonds on their branches, beside the Indian flood of the resounding Hoaspis. By that time, the pistachio was actually grown in Arabia and Syria, as well as further east. According to Pliny, the pistachio tree was first brought to Italy by Vitellius, father of the emperor, who served in the Levant between 35 and 39 AD. The pistachio is propagated by grafting, as we said. And as it spread in Mediterranean lands, it may well have been grafted more often on already thriving terebinth trees, as it still is true in Turkey. From Aristobulus, again, we have the following passage. Alexander crossed the mountains to Bactria by ways barren, but for a little shrubby terebinth, so short of food that the flesh of beasts was eaten, and so short of wood that it was eaten raw. But with the raw meat, the digestive was Silphion, which grew plentifully. Today, world-renowned pistachios are the Sicilian ones, from the magical black volcanic soil of the land. The small Sicilian town of Bronte grows some of the best ones. Along old scars on the earth's surface, made from lava flows and between lava stones, Bronte's pistachios grow at the feet of the mythical and active volcano of Etna. This landscape makes it impossible to use any kind of machinery. Man does all the work here, like they did thousands of years ago. Sicily had many conquerors over its long history, and it was the Arabs who conquered Sicily in the Middle Ages and began the extensive cultivation of pistachio trees here. Pistachios are called fastuca in the Brode dialect, a term derived from the old Arab word. By the 1500s, Bronte was a flourishing pistachio trade hub, luring merchants from across Italy. In the town, they call it Green Gold, and for a reason. Bronte means thunder, and it's the name of one of the Cyclops who forged the lighting of Zeus in Hephaestus' forges under Etna. The Grotta di Bronte is one of the caves where dwarf elephants used to go and die during the period they inhabited Sicily, and tusks from this time have been discovered there. The enormous nasal hole of the trunk was mistaken for the eye of a cyclops, and thus was born the legend of the Cyclops in Sicily. However, the elephant never had chance to try the pistachios. As we said, obviously the elephants lived in prehistoric times, long before obviously humans arrived. The Arabs, who introduced pistachio in the lands of Sicily, they brought other exquisite Middle Eastern plants, such as sugarcane and citrus fruits. The green gold, or frastuca, as it used to be called when it was used as a medicine, it's truly emerald in color. It has an incomparable flavor and aroma and produces unique ice creams, custards, sweet and salty sauces, and desserts. It's incredibly adaptable and has a delicate balance between sweet and savory. And this is from the Brode Pistachio website. Because of the steep, impassable environment and the danger that the fruit would be dispersed among the volcanic rocks, the labor involved in harvesting is expensive. And it's still done, as I said earlier, entirely by hand, either by making the fruit fall from the trees straight into a container carried on the shoulder of the person under the tree, or by shaking the branches and collecting the pistachios on cloths stretched out beneath the plants. In some cases, an upturned umbrella is used. This highly prized emerald is unique if it grows out of the rock. Popular cakes include pistachio little horn cornetti, shaped like croissants and served at breakfast, iris, a fried bun covered in pistachio crumbs and filled with pistachio cream, and filetta, a saucer-shaped pistachio brioche. Each year, in Raffadali, another pistachio-growing township in Sicily, known for its Arab-style architecture, holds its picturesque Fastuca Fest, which is with cooking exhibitions and tastings of local treats as pistachio meatballs and sweet couscous made with grated pistachios, candied fruits and almonds. Raffadali specialty cakes include curly-shaped green pistachio Ricci biscuits, pistachio-filled tube-shaped cannoli pastries, and pies filled with a blend of cream pistachio and ricotta chips milk cheese. And here is a very interesting fact about pistachios. Exploding pistachios. It seems like without any regard to our sanity and logic, pistachios sometimes burst into flames. Like so many other delicious things, one of the secrets behind pistachios' tastiness is the high fat levels. The nut is probably about 45 to 55% fat and has a low water content, and hence fat burns incredibly well. The fat cleaving enzymes are activated by the elevated water content. This means that the fat decomposes when the nut becomes moist, adding more flammable factors like extra carbon dioxide and heat into the mix. So if you have lots of pistachios in one place, and they will have heavy weight and pressure, that creates ideal conditions to burst in flames. But yeah, you need a lot of pistachios. It's not going to happen with one bag of pistachios that are extra dry. It needs a bit of moisture as well and a lot of weight. In Greece, famous are the Aegina pistachios, which were from the island of Aegina in the Saronic Gulf, south-west of Athens and Attica. And they were brought there by the doctor Nikolaos Peroglou in 1896. In 1916, he had published a book for the cultivation of a pistachio tree, and he wanted to spread the cultivation of pistachio. So he managed to convince the Guinean farmers to plant pistachios. He spread grafting branches for people to use. And wherever he was making a present to people, he was making a present of a small pistachio tree. Two of these little presents, they still exist in the city of Aegina. If you ever go to Greece, try them. They're really tasty ones. As we said, in ancient Greek, Nicander was the first who named the tree pistachia, or pistachio, as we say it in English. And the word comes from the ancient Persian word pista, which probably means the nut or the tree. And from that root, from that word, all the naming of the Western languages of pistachio. So we have pistache in French, pistachio in English, pistaka in Russian, fustuk in Arabic. I'll be back after this short break.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here, I would like to mention a little bit about the peanut as well, an honorable mention to the peanuts, because it's another very interesting legume this time, not a nut per se. And it's one of the most traveled foods coming from the New World. And that says something. Imagine, of course, we have chilies and potatoes, which are very traveled too. But it's difficult to overstate the role of peanuts in traditional world cuisines and the health of the people who ate it. Satays and sauces and cookies and stir fries with peanuts, sweets and confections, salads and greens mixed with peanuts. The list of peanut dishes is a long and rich one. According to the website alwayspt.org, it is health that drove the peanut to be a building block of healthy traditional diets. Throughout centuries, legumes have been an essential component of traditional diets. While peanuts are botanically legumes, from a culinary perspective, they are used like nuts. This connection between the two is close. Legumes and nuts share very important characteristics. The first one is the ability to store without refrigeration. Therefore, they can be consumed after some time and provide calories and nourishment throughout the year. They share another property in that they both contain a good amount of protein, something that they also have in common with animal products. Of course, the interesting thing here with a peanut, the most traveled nut in the world, is that is it a mistake that originated in Africa because of the peanut's connection with the slave trade? As I mentioned, the truth is that it's a new world food, South American in fact, most likely from Bolivia or Peru. And peanuts were brought to Africa by Portuguese slave traders, unfortunately, and their popularity spread there slowly. Culinary historian Jessica Harris reports that the Mandinka of Western African still remember this and refer to the legume as tiga, a diminutive of the Portuguese word mandeiga, meaning butter, which perhaps has connotations of the oil of the peanut which was used for cooking. So throughout the centuries, the Africans recognized the incredible nutrition potential of this new food, which is 26% protein by weight. Plus, the plant, as all the legumes do, enriches the soil with nitrogen. So the peanut became the plant with the highest protein yield per acre. Besides being a major source of nutrition, the taste of peanuts became central to the West African cooking. And peanuts could be eaten toasted as a nut or consumed raw like other legumes. Raw peanuts were boiled much like dried peas and served as a side dish. In Ghana and Nigeria, peanuts were cooked together with dried corn and made into flour and peanut butter. From there, the peanut traveled back forward to Brazil, and it was reintroduced to the northeastern Brazil by African slaves. Often cooked with okra, it was made into stews. Similarly, the peanut traveled to the US with African slaves who cultivated and cooked it in the plantations of the southern states. From the time of the Civil War, it spread through America. Then a scientist at Tuskegee Institute, named George Washington Carver, became a passionate advocate of the peanut, producing a peanut cookbook with 105 ways of preparing the peanuts. Carver is a very interesting character. He was born into slavery in Diamond Grove, now Diamond, Newton County, Missouri, near Crystal Place, sometime in the early 1860s. Obviously, we have sketchy records of slaves' births and their background. His father, Giles, died before George was born. And when he was 1 week old, he, his sister, and his mother were kidnapped by night raiders from Arkansas. George's brother, James, was rushed to safety from the kidnappers. The kidnappers sold the trio in Kentucky. Moses Carver, the plantation owner and owner of the slaves, hired John Bentley to find them, but he only found the infant George. So Moses negotiated with the raiders to gain the boy's return and rewarded Bentley. After slavery was abolished, Moses Carver and his wife, Susan, raised George and his older brother, James, as their own children. They encouraged George to continue his intellectual pursuits, and so Aunt Susan taught him the basics of reading and writing. In early 1888, Carver obtained $300 loan from the Bank of Ness City for education. By June, he left the area. In 1890, Carver started studying art and piano at Simpson College in Indianola, Iowa. His art teacher, Etta Budd, recognized Carver's talent for painting flowers and plants. She encouraged him to study botany at Iowa State Agricultural College in Ames. When he began there in 1891, he was the first black student at Iowa State. Carver's bachelor's thesis for a degree in agriculture was Plants as Modified by Man, dated 1894. Iowa State University professors Joseph Budd and Louis Pummel convinced Carver to continue there for his master's degree. Carver did research at the Iowa Experiment Station under Pummel during the next 2 years. His work at the Experiment Station in plant pathology and mycology first gained him national recognition and respect as a botanist. Carver received his Master's of Science degree in 1896. Carver taught as the first black faculty member of Iowa State. He developed techniques to improve soils depleted by repeated plantings of cotton. Together with other agricultural experts, he urged farmers, especially black farmers, to restore nitrogen to the soils by practicing systematic crop rotation, alternating cotton crops with planting of sweet potatoes or legumes such as peanuts, soybeans and cowpeas. These crops both restored nitrogen to the soil and were good for human consumption. He was an amazing character. If you want to Google his name and find out more, he's a genius. George Washington Carver. Anyway, back to our peanuts, and let's end our story from there. So how did the peanut travel to the east, to Asia? We have the first mentions of peanut in China as early as 1530, so just a tiny bit after its discovery in the Americas. It was the Spanish and Portuguese again who brought the peanut east. They were obviously spice traders and missionaries. The Spanish took it to the Philippines and the Portuguese to India and Macau. And from there it traveled throughout China via returning Chinese traders. The peanut was widely accepted. The Chinese already loved legumes and nuts in general anyway. And they used it to make sauces and used the peanuts as oils to make oils. And this is it. This is our short history of pistachio tree and the bonus short history of the peanut. And for the extra bit for Patreon backers only, I have a recipe of tuna in a pistachio and sesame crust with sweet pickled peppers, plus a sweet recipe using pistachios. So this is a recipe for four portions for four people. So get four tuna steaks, roughly 250 grams each, or 9 ounces, 80 grams of pistachios, plus some extra to serve. Shelled, of course, the weight, about 10 grams of black pepper. And resist them until they cool down before eating. Enjoy! I hope you enjoyed this episode. Take care. Be well and see you soon for another archaeogastronomical adventure.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.